Adventures between the Arctic and Antarctic. Listen to Arvid Fuchs on the Ocean Change podcast. Welcome to this podcast episode. Here's Bärbel in Hamburg.
Hi, this is Arvid in Bad Bramstedt.
Arvid, before we talk about your first polar expedition with the Dagmar on, let's briefly talk about your plans and about Dagmar. And what condition is she and where is she?
Yeah, she's based in Flensburg, which is the very northern part of Germany, close to the border to Denmark. And that's basically her home port. And so, we just went out with her for a short trip, a Christmas, New Year trip. So that's what we usually do when the ship is available and just with family and friends and nothing serious, just cruising around for a couple of hours per day. And then the Baltic is empty, basically. So there's no other traffic going on and the harbors are free and it's very relaxed. But it also means that after this trip, and we finished the trip last weekend, the boat will be prepared for the shipyard. So all the sails will have to come down. And we are basically taking her apart. And in March, we will bring her to the shipyard in Egernsund, which is in Denmark. And then the shipwrights will start working on her. And it will take a couple of months, actually, before she's ready for sea again.
When do you start your next expedition? Do you have plans for this year?
Yes, I do. So we are working for a future project. So our project is called Ocean Change. We started Ocean Change in 2015 when we sailed down to Antarctica and we finished the last project, Ocean Change 21-22 in late September. So and there will be an Ocean Change project 23. And there will be also one 24. So it's an ongoing project. And right now we are discussing the items with the scientists from the various institutes. And yeah, we have high-end devices on board to measure CO2 and temperature and salinity, oxygen in the seawater and other things as well. And the institutes are really interested in these data. And so we will collect data for the institutes. And now we are setting up a plan where we're going to go this year. It will not be a trip far up north to the Arctic because since the boat will stay for quite a while in the shipyard and we will have to do some crew training as well and medical training and all the rest of it. So we will sail for probably 2 or 2.5 months this summer and then prepare another trip up north for next year.
Oh, that sounds interesting. When you started your expeditions, you didn't talk about ocean change. What has changed during all these years that you have chosen this motto in 2015?
Well, traveling to remote areas, you eventually become kind of a witness what is going on. And so I love nature. And initially, when I started out, I just wanted to explore the unspoiled nature far up in the north, the oceans, and down to Antarctica. And I also cruised through the jungle of Borneo and other areas. So I had a strong liking for all kind of outdoor activities. And when you come across some places where the beaches are polluted with plastic or whatever. So it's something that really, that's really not only annoying. So it's something that does something with your mind. And also I became a witness of climate change in the Arctic because the Arctic is warming up 3 times as fast as the rest of the world. And glaciers are melting and the Greenlandic ice sheet loses a lot of its volume. The permafrost is thawing in, for example, at the north coast of Alaska and in other places. So many changes are taking place. And the sea ice on the Arctic Ocean is melting. at a dramatic rate. And so I said, well, something is changing to the worse, and you can't just come back and tell people about adventures and showing nice pictures and videos. You also have to take responsibility and talk about things that are not so nice, and showing the people what's happening in remote areas where very few people have access to, if any at all. And that's why I also was seeking kind of cooperation with scientists, with scientific institutes. They are the experts to analyze data, and I'm trying to transport the knowledge or what the scientists found out to the people on the streets. So they are not scientists either. And so I'm just trying to bring the problem to the people and make them realize that we have to do something about it.
You have gathered so many experiences. You travel with the Dagmar since 1989. Let's talk about your first expedition. You had reinforced Dagmar for polar areas because you are so addicted to the ice, as you told us in the last episode. What was your first destination? It was not just a tiny goal. It was a huge goal. Your first idea was, come on, let's surround the North Pole.
Yeah, that was way back in 1991. And so hardly anybody was talking about global change or that the ice was melting. So at that time, everything seems to be the way it should be, really. And there was no focus on the Arctic routes like the Northwest Passage or the Northeast Passage. So it was just left by itself, basically. And so I grew up with all the books from Amundsen and from Nansen. Amundsen was the first one who sailed through the Northwest Passage, where so many previous expeditions had failed and died and lost their shipment, their equipment and everything. And Amundsen was the first one who succeeded in doing so. And he used a similar boat like the Dagmar Oen. So it's slightly bigger, the Jöa, as it was called. It's slightly bigger than the Dagmar Oen, but it was built for coastal trade, for fishing and so on. And Dagmar Oen was also built as a North Sea fishing vessel. And these vessels are small, so they are pretty maneuverable. And ice sail was the first attempt to circumnavigate the whole North Pole, starting with the Northeast Passage, which is following the coastline of Siberia from Norway all the way to Alaska, then stay there over winter and start sailing through the Northwest Passage along the North American coast to Greenland. That was the plan. It didn't turn out the way we wanted it to happen. But anyway, we started in 91.
And you planned for 3 years?
Yeah, we planned for 3 years. And so we started in 91 for the Northeast Passage. But due to the political changes that took place, we were not allowed to proceed. So we had to overwinter on the Yenisei. And in 92, we tried to get further to the east, to Alaska, but we couldn't get through the ice. So it was just a totally different situation than the ice situation is nowadays. So we struggled in the ice and we got stuck, and we turned back and spent the second winter in Norway, in Tromsø, and changed our plans.
So this was the first major expedition, new ship, new crew, new destination. What was the most challenging part for you?
Well, it was very difficult to get any information from the, at that time, Soviet side, because it was a closed area and we were the first Western vessel that got the permit to sail through the Northeast Passage, and it took us 2 years to obtain this permit to get through the passage, and so there was not much knowledge about the ice situation. At least it was not available for us. And of course, I had a lot of experience traveling on the ice, in the ice, but not with a boat about that size. And so it was quite a challenge. And we knew we had to be careful. We had to find a crew. And of course, since it was just such a big project to get the ship into shape, to be able to get into the ice and to overwinter and still be safe for the crew and for us. So it was from the logistics, from the planning, from sailing, it was a big project, a big project for me.
It was the first private ship to sail the Northeast Passage, wasn't it?
Yeah, so it was the first ship that even tried to sail around the North Pole. As I said, in 92, we weren't allowed to proceed. In 92, we couldn't get through due to the ice situation. So we returned to Tromsø and changed our plans and said, well, Russia is very difficult at the moment, so let's go through the Northwest Passage first. So we changed the direction, basically, from Tromsø. We sailed in 93 to Iceland around the southern tip of Greenland, all the way up to the very north of Greenland, and then proceeded into the Northwest Passage. And we did the whole trip in one season. So from Tromsø to Dutch Harbor in Alaska in one season. And we were only the third vessel that was able to proceed through the Northwest Passage in one season without any icebreaker assistance. That was pretty spectacular. And at that time, you didn't have these information available as you nowadays have. There was a weather fax on board, which was never actual, but you didn't have any satellite support. You didn't have any satellite communication or anything of that kind. So you were pretty much on your own. And it was more or less the traditional way to navigate in the ice. And of course, we were reading the book from Amundsen. It was on the navigation table and chart. And we were just going through the papers and seeing where they went and what they did. It was quite an adventure.
You had been taught by the Inuits how to read the ice, as you told during the last episode. Did you feel prepared for the Arctic Ocean as well?
Yes, to a certain extent, but learning is an ongoing story. So even nowadays, I would never say that I know everything about ice. It's an ongoing process. And so it's a different whether you pull a sled across a frozen Arctic Ocean or whether you sail with a boat in the summertime between drifting ice flows. But I was pretty much aware of what we would have to expect. And we got through all right. And the boat was well prepared. But still, you should never say, I know anything about ice. So that would be the end of the story. So it's an ongoing story.
During this expedition, you spent the first winter in Siberia, in Igarka, and you had temperatures of -60 degrees. Was Dagmar prepared for conditions like this as well?
Yeah, she was well prepared, actually. So there was a lot of snow in the winter in Igarka, and we let the snow accumulate around the ship and on deck as well. So that was an excellent insulation, and she's all wood. And wood is very well. You do not have any condensation inside the boat because wood is alive, basically. And we had a couple of stoves, of course, and the fuel we needed to feed the stoves was available in Igarka. So you get a special fuel called Arctic diesel, which is also liquid in these cold weather conditions. Otherwise, it would just get sticky and you could not use it anymore. So they know, of course, what you need in these kind of weather conditions. And so the boat was prepared, yeah. During the winter, always at least three crew members on board. One Russian, of course, because you need one person with a mother tongue, basically. And the rest were, we changed the crew every once in a while so that everybody had the chance also to stay there for a while.
Okay, the ship was prepared, you just said, and how does your body react to minus 60 degree? How does it feel?
This extreme cold is dangerous. So I had my experience with cold weather because when we went to the North Pole, it was below minus 50, so which is close to 60. And so I was well aware what the cold can do to your body and to your mind as well. And so it's not like in our latitudes where you feel cold and you tremble and you just take another coat and then that's it. But in this extreme cold, so your fingertips might hurt for a while and then you feel nothing anymore. And you're not even aware that they start to freeze up and they become white, or your nose tip become white. And that's the first stage of frostbite. And so if you do nothing about it, so it will eventually freeze and you will lose whatever is frozen. And so you have to be aware of that, and you have to dress properly. You must not sweat, for example, because if you start sweating, just even in minus 40, minus 50, you can start sweating for a short period of time if you wear too many warm clothes. But you will not get rid of the moisture. And when you stop and your underwear is wet because you sweated, then you will freeze. And it's you just have to know the technique how to behave properly in this extreme cold, and you can even freeze your lungs when you breathe too fast, and if you run, and yeah, everything can freeze, so you have to be very careful.
What technique do you recommend?
It's kind of monitoring. You shouldn't be out there just by yourself. So you watch your partner, and because he might not be aware that his nose is just about to freeze. And I lost, actually, during my North Pole trip, I lost part of my nose. And luckily, it recovered later on. So
really?
Yeah. There are even pictures.
How did it look, Arvid?
Ugly.
It was white. It was dark. You didn't smell? Or what does it mean if you lose your nose?
Yeah, it was the tip of the nose. And so it's, it start getting white. White and then black, basically. And what is black? Oh. It's just dissolved somehow, and it's also painful. I mean, you should be aware that frostbite can be very painful. But eventually, so it recovered. But we all had frostbite on the fingertips, for example. And one of the crew during the North Pole trip, he had severe frostbite on his toes and on his heels. So it's serious. And but also, it's not only the physical effects of cold weather. It's also the mental effects. So if you lose too much body heat, especially through your head, so people always have to wear a hat because you lose your body heat through the head. And then you tend to become slow and you tend to become tired, and you will not take care of what is needed. And so you have to monitor your partner and say, well, take care. So you're not concentrated, and put your hat on again and put it on properly. And beside that, your nose is white and your cheeks are white, and do something about it. And you just have to take care of your body. That's on the triple D.
Wow. Arvid, this was a deep dive about behavior in the polar regions. An unplanned deep dive, but very interesting. Thank you for sharing this with us. And I think next time we start traveling on board Dag Mahorn again and listen to your ice sail expedition.
Okay, we will do so, baby.
Thank you very much. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye. That was the podcast Ocean Change by Arvid Fuchs and Bärbel Fenig.